Welcome to Red Meat, a collection of the tastiest tidbits from Odyssey's conservative news talk radio stations across the country, a place where we're not afraid to dig in. America's capital city, the land of cherry trees and George Washington, aka D.C., has gone 12 days without a single murder following President Trump's federal takeover of the local police, a feat seen only one other time since the pandemic spike. The current streak without a homicide, 12 days, may not seem so impressive until you realize the nation's capital has one of the highest murder rates among major U.S. cities. There have already been more than 100 homicides so far this year. In March, Washington went 16 days without a murder, and that feat was so notable that a police spokesman told the Washington Post it was the longest period in at least 6 years. So, does this mean Trump was right?
All right, our buddy Mark Walter is back with us from Armed American Radio. Why would you not want to emulate what Donald Trump's done in Washington, D.C. in the last week and a half?
Well, I think most every resident in D.C. wants him to, and you know, they're thrilled with what's happened. You know, Pritzker put a tweet out. I don't know if you saw it. Your neighbor, you know, do not come, Donald Trump. You're neither wanted nor are you needed here in Illinois. Well, Pritzker, unfortunately, there are millions of Republicans that live in Illinois, and there are millions of people who are fed up with the crime in cities in your state, and he is wanted, and he is going to come, and you're going to look a fool when he fixes Chicago. Look, Mark, how many times have you and I discussed, if I had a dollar for every time we talked about a particular shooting in Chicago, we would have tens and tens and tens of thousands of dollars, buckets of dollar bills. Okay.
Yeah.
The problem is fixable, and we've seen it in D.C. 12 days or 13 days now, I think, without a murder in D.C. Statistically, almost impossible.
Well, they've never heard of it. Stephen Miller said they've checked the history. It's never happened before. So, in other words, it is possible to reduce crime. You have to listen to this crazy socialist mayor in Chicago saying that, you know, the days of incarceration are over. That's just racist. So let me get this straight. It doesn't matter what color you are. If you take somebody else's life, you need to be locked up forever for that. How is that racist? I do not understand. Brandon Johnson has learned nothing at all and doesn't intend to.
No, because this is not about crime and fixing the crime problems in Chicago. It never has been. This is about political agenda over the safety and security of their residents.
Yep.
This is about power and money and making sure that they maintain their grip on Chicago. The Democrats have controlled Chicago now for over 100 years. They own everything that has happened in Chicago. They can't blame anybody but. And that is pretty much the same in D.C. as well. Now, when you look at D.C., people say, well, crime's not bad. Schumer said crime's not that bad. Crime is falling. Okay, you can have inflation at 12% and claim it's falling down to 9%, but it's still at historic highs.
Yes.
In 2024, D.C.'s murder rate, just so people understand what we're talking about here. In 2024, D.C.'s murder rate was 136% higher than that of Louisiana, which is the nation's worst state, and a stunning, get this, and I'll quote John Lott here, 434% higher than the national state average. Of the nation's top 25 most populous cities, D.C. had the worst murder rate, 20% higher than second place Indianapolis, and 179% higher than the entire group's average. So it can be fixed. And again, I point out, we talk about it all the time. When you raise the risk of committing crime, crime falls.
Yeah.
That simple.
Well, and Mark, you know, their biggest argument normally is, oh, we got to get rid of the guns. We got to go after the guns. It's the guns problem. It's not a crime problem. It's a gun problem. And of course, in this scenario, what has stopped the crime? Right? A bunch of good guys showed up with guns. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, that's what has stopped this crime. Let's call it for what it is. We have military and federal officials with guns patrolling the streets and showing a presence of good guys with guns, and it has thwarted it. It's not a matter of whether or not the guns are the problem. Guns, in this case, I think are the reason why there's going to be is peace.
It is remarkable to see the truth unfold right before your eyes. It really, truly is.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, this is very embarrassing for people like Gavin Newsom, very embarrassing for people like Pritzker, very embarrassing for people like Tim Walz and particularly Chuck Schumer, who says, I walk around the city, I feel safe all the time. He walks around with a private security or a government-paid Capitol Police security detail. They're on the wrong side of this. We all know it. Trump has got them on their heels. It's remarkable to watch. Because all they can do now is defend the indefensible, which is crime-ridden cities. And look, I think we talked about it before, Mark, but Murphy in Connecticut puts out a post. Okay, yeah, right. The biggest, highest crime rate cities are in red states. They're all Democrat run.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every single one of those cities are Democrat run.
Yeah, they'd love to point that out. Missouri's a red state, but of course, you got two big blue blotches on each side of the state. They always point to Tennessee. Tennessee's a red state, but then you got a high crime rate in Memphis, and that's the excuse they use, that it must be because it's a red state.
Blotches, huh? Can we interchange the word stain there, too, if we wanted?
You could insert the word stain on it if you'd like to. You know, I'm interested in your take on this, Mark. We're talking to Mark Walters of Armed American Radio. We are on here once a week defending the Second Amendment. There's a lot of people conflicted over the president's executive order to ban flag burning because the Supreme Court ruled a while back that that is a protected First Amendment right. How do you feel about that?
You know, I don't know. I'm a little conflicted here, too, because I, like you, I make my living off the First Amendment.
Yes.
Right.
And I defend vile speech, not the speech itself, but I defend anybody's right to say what they want. Now that, to me, is what has made America great. There's a reason that's the First Amendment. The Second Amendment defends all of the rest. But I have, you know, if people want, I don't have a problem. Look, I hate the fact that people say certain things and do certain things. And I'll give you this example. And I think we've talked about this before a couple years back. I'll defend the Black Panthers on walking around the streets armed on a march lawfully at Stone Mountain in Georgia all day long. They have every right to do so. As long as they're not violating any laws, they have the same right to carry a gun on a march just like I do. And I will defend them. I might not like their political viewpoints. So, you know, symbolically banning it, I don't know. I'm on the fence on that one. I really, truly am. People have a right to be vile idiots if they want to be in this country, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody. But they have to remember, too, that words also come with consequences. You know, people say you can't scream fire in a crowded theater. Yeah, you can. Sure you can. Stand up and yell fire. You might get hauled out and thrown in jail, but you can do it if you want to.
That's true. There used to be consequences for things like that. I mean, you can say what you want. You have to live with the consequences. These days, they turn around and elect these idiots mayors of these big cities, like New York's about to elect a socialist, this guy in Chicago. I just can't believe the words that are coming out of some of their mouths.
No, it is crazy. I mean, let me play the host on you. How do you feel about it? You may have mentioned it today.
I am a little conflicted on it because when I see somebody do it, I want to punch them in the face.
Yeah.
But if you walked out here in front of City Hall in St. Louis and you torched a gay pride flag, they would charge you with a hate crime. So there has to be some consistency here.
It's also not fair to discuss D.C. police and government without talking about how legitimate their so-called declining crime rates were before Trump took over. Here's Newell Norman from WWL with more.
Democrats keep screaming at the top of their lungs that crime is down. They're at a 30-year low. We're not spending a lot of time talking about one of the commanders that's on leave at the present time under investigation for manipulating crime stats. We don't know really to what extent that has gone. But we also didn't know until just the day before yesterday, the city settled a 2020 lawsuit that was brought by Sergeant Charlotte Jassau, alleging that leadership in the Metropolitan Police Department of the Washington, D.C. punished her for speaking out against this manipulation scheme of crime stats. So this is not only recent, this is while they're experiencing this downward trend in crime stats over a long period of years. As you well know, I mean, that's a lot more meaningful when you see a sustained decline, right, in crime stats. So the allegations are that the Metropolitan Police Department brass, the high-level folks, repeated attempts to distort crime stats by downgrading a number of felonies to misdemeanors, which impacts crime stats reporting. In other words, misdemeanors don't get reported. So when we're evaluating these reports that go to the FBI, they don't count the misdemeanors. What these officers are alleging, the crimes that actually occurred were actually felonies, and they should have been reported. So as I said before, the elements of Jussow's case that had been previously reported, what was recently reported was that the city settled with this particular sergeant. And what has also had not been revealed were several exhibits in the legal proceedings that were brought to light, including a 2022 deposition of one of the Metropolitan Police Department commanders, Randy Griffin. At the time of the events in question, Griffin actually was the leader of the 4th District in the northernmost part of the city. And he confirmed in his deposition that he tasked a police captain, Franklin Porter, with finding a solution for the theft problem. Now, there is not a single jurisdiction that you will visit that you're not going to find that the most reported crime of all crimes are going to be thefts, right? So if there's an opportunity to move numbers in one particular crime category to look and make it look as though that you have an improving crime picture, it's in the theft category. Everybody knows that's been around in the police business. They all understand that because that's where the largest sum of crimes occur. So he tasked Franklin Porter, a captain, with finding a solution for the theft problem, which was driving up the 4th District's stats, going all the way back to April of 2018. And in the deposition, they basically come right out. And what they say is, and they ask this individual that tasked the other individual to do it, they asked Griffin. Now, Captain Porter stated that his team, after researching the D.C. code, specifically Lieutenant Andrew Zabotsky, came up with a classification of taking property without right. Is that correct? Yes. So he's saying here that you told him to come up with a solution for the theft problem, which is driving up the crime stats for the district. Yes. That was true. Yes. Okay, and his solution is that they're going to use classification to taking property without a right, correct? He says, yes. Then it came right out and said that this taking property without a right, these reports are not tracked in the D.C. crime reporting scheme. And from there, they're not tracked and they're not reported to the FBI. So there it is. They've laid this out going back years as to how they were going to have the image of the MPD, the Metropolitan Police Department in Washington, D.C., improved by the manipulation of crime stats. And in fact, they went so far as to put out memos talking about this. So they acknowledged that they were going to go to this taking property without a right, which was a misdemeanor, and that became the plan of the 4th District. And they went through a lot of different things, but this strategy obviously became the default of where they were going to be on these types of crimes. So the report shows that the number of crimes categorized as taking property without a right grew in a very short period of time by 500%. It had actually been a crime category that had hardly ever been used. always a telltale sign that there is a scheme to manipulate crime data when you find a category growing by triple digits like this in a short period of time. There's been a fundamental change. There's been a policy change. Boom, there it is. Porter, one of the two officers who came up with this strategy, sent a September 2019 email to the sergeant serving under him, ordering them not to classify crimes as felonies if they fell under the categories of assault with a dangerous weapon, robberies, burglary, or felony assault. Instead, he directed them to turn the matter over to their on-duty watch commander to classify the offense. Now it's grown. They started to make their impact in the theft category. Now they're trying to move even further into other categories. So you, the arresting officer, you don't determine what the crime is that you're actually arresting someone for. You have to call your watch commander. You need to have a discussion, and he is going to dictate to you how this is ultimately going to play out. In fact, Franklin Porter, the captain, sent the following memo out to his sergeants. Whenever we have a Part 1 offense, no matter if it's an arrest or just a report, numbers should never be pulled until the watch commander is spoken with. The cases involving assault with deadly weapons, robberies, burglary ones, and felony assaults, if the watch commander is not on scene, then call the watch commander's phone number. I don't want to be notified that we have a Part 1 offense in an email. Doesn't get locked up any better than that. They're not hiding it at all. They're basically saying, I don't want to see this in an email.
The liberals crying about Trump daring to bring more security into D.C. and save people's lives has us wondering if wins like this will finally kill the vampire that Elon Musk referred to as the woke mind virus. Rich Zeoli has some thoughts to share on whether woke is finally DOA.
Anyway, welcome back. Glad you're here. Very happy to welcome back to the show the author of the book, Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me, Dr. Wilfred Riley. Of course, on Twitter at will_da_beast630. What's up, my man?
Not much. Good to be back on the show.
There's a lot of outrage over Cracker Barrel's rebranding of their logo. I don't really quite get the outrage, though. I'm not really quite sure why people are so upset. I know there's a lot of people saying it's kind of DEI-ish. I don't really see it, though.
Well, I mean, there were a lot of buddies of mine, both white guys and black guys, saying, you know, ha ha, they took, you know, the Caucasian guy and the barrel off the logo. What are they doing? It's just it's a sign that says Cracker Barrel or CB, just in brown on yellow. This, to me, kind of from a business perspective, what you're seeing is the conflict between people with sort of these management degrees from like lower Ivy League schools and the brands that they're supposed to represent but probably hate. So, like, you and I have had whole shows where we've kind of made fun of, you know, Bud Light picked the Bud Light Girl of the Year and it was a man, like, ha, ha, ha. But someone actually had to make that ha, ha, ha decision and say, oh, who doesn't love trans women? You know, so that's a thing that went on. I mean, Target agreed to do a Pride Month push with some other retailer, and they were selling, quote-unquote, tucking panties for little kids. So this has gone on and on. I mean, Harley Davidson did an ad. I forget what that even involved, but, you know, major backlash against them. Jaguar did an ad that didn't have the Jaguar. I mean, the classic Mercedes competitor in it. It was, like, mostly black women in purple clown suits dancing.
Yeah.
So this is something that we've seen over and over and over again. Like, the branding for Jaguar would be like an Englishman, you know, for some reason holding a scotch in his hand while he's driving or something. You know, Cracker Barrel, it's like Mama and Papa's store, but upscale. So they the stack of country CDs by the door next to a rack of oversized sweatshirts. So, I mean, this again is just they hired a marketing firm. The person who was in charge of that, like VP level, designed this campaign where they're like making everything smooth and sleek, like the hose on the wall and all that are now in like picture frames. I mean, so we'll see if it works. I think it's going to backlash terribly, like most people do.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess somebody made a good point, which is that they're kind of late to the minimalism trend that's been going on with logos, because everybody wants nostalgia now. And like, I was reading the other day that sunscreen, they're bringing back the fake coconut flavor, the smell, the fake coconut smell of sunscreen, which makes me happy. Because when I was a kid, I used to love that. And it smells like vacation in a bottle. You know, they got rid of it, though, apparently, because I guess people wanted healthier options. But now they're bringing it back, the fake banana smell and the fake coconut smell. And nostalgia is all the rage. So for Cracker Barrel to do it now, when you're literally getting rid of the nostalgia in your logo at a time when people want nostalgia, not a good look.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's just for each of these brands, you have to know your audience. And I mean, the Cracker Barrel audience, when I think it's not even one ethnic group, but kind of after church, mostly conservative, mostly Southern, you know, are they going to prefer a place that looks like an old country store or a place that looks like a fake upscale restaurant designed by a marketing team? And with a lot of this, you can see why people like what they like. Like, everyone remembers the smell of sunscreen because they went to the lake with their girlfriend their junior year.
Yeah.
So you want those things that bring back the memories of the good past to some extent. That's kind of what you're selling. That's what branding is. Branding is the idea that you're not just drinking sugar water fizz when you're drinking Coke. You're drinking the South or whatever. And forgetting that and making every business look pretty much the same is a really, really bad idea.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I didn't understand the outrage from the woke DEI perspective, because it's not Bud Light. I mean, the barrel isn't identifying as a tree or something. It's not like that. It's not like a trans thing or anything. But from the perspective of the marketing aspect of this, of taking away the character and making it look very bland, as you explain it now I get it from that perspective. Like, it looks like everything else, in other words.
Yeah, I think that. So there are two things that people complain a lot about with the sort of modern marketing. One is quote unquote woke. Like, what does this have to do with politics? Why did Bud Light, which is a beer company for frat boys that sells, you know, horrible yellow colored water, why did they have to, you know, make a statement about LGBT rights? That's part of the backlash, I think. But another part of it just is there are set brands that, whether or not all people like them, the customers of a company usually like, that you associate with Harley Davidson or whatever. And if you start trying to market Harley Davidson to upper middle class women, you're probably going to change the thing that makes the base of a motorcycle company want to ride motorcycles.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with just embracing your audience. Like, if you're a motorcycle company, most people who are buying your product are going to be tough men between 20 and 50. And that's fine. You don't have to start selling pink motorbikes.
No, and Lisa Schneiderfeld, who was the VP of marketing for Anheuser-Busch, did not like the audience. She hated him. She said, we got to get away from this white frat guy kind of thing. I mean, she literally did not like the consumer base. When you don't like your customer base, you're doomed to fail. It would be like as if Subaru tomorrow decided they were going to stop going for white, college-educated, liberal women listening to NPR. You know what I mean?
That's a very polite way of describing who buys the Subaru Outback there, Rich. I mean, yeah, they definitely are women, almost entirely, mostly Caucasian. But yeah, I guess we're kind of saying the same thing. There's nothing wrong with having a branding preference. Subaru, in fact, would be a very good company to do sort of a gay rights ad, because it would fit extremely well with their base. With Harley Davidson, I don't even think most bikers necessarily are sexually unadventurous. It's just sort of, why the hell is this in the motorcycle commercial? What? How fast does the bike go? So, I mean, you see stuff like that from time to time. I mean, there are a limited number of sponsors NASCAR is going to have, and so on. And I think companies should sort of wise up and realize this. That would be my take. Obviously, the whole theme is that Cracker Barrel is a Southern-themed, post-church, down-home kind of restaurant that serves breakfast and catfish. You know, it's targeted at a working to middle-class audience. the guy, the old guy, is modeled on an actual farmer they bought like their second store for. So I think when you say, well, this is the disconnect. The marketing manager comes in and says, well, people overall find that corny. We've done a focus group. That might be true, but people overall aren't the people that are driving the church van to Cracker Barrel.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, keep the guy, keep the barrel. It sounds good to me. And again, like the Popeyes joke, like it is funny, but like Popeyes is a working class Southern black and white brand. Like that's why they're making fun of their managers. For Popeyes to put in, would it even be candles on the tables or something? I mean, it would just be a foolish rebranding move that would get a lot of candles broken. Just accept that you sell fried chicken in the South and sell fried chicken in the South. That's not the classiest business you can go into.
Obviously, the president is concerned that our museums, as some of them, are putting too much emphasis on all the negativity of our nation's past and not enough on the obstacles we've overcome, the future, and our greatness. And you have a lot in the media coming out and saying this is the whitewashing of history and comparing it once again to the Nazis, which is getting increasingly tiring. But how do you see it as the author of the book Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me?
Well, this is actually a great place to plug the book Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me, chapter one.
Did.
Yeah. I took the ball from you, ran with it. Chapter one, the real history of slavery. But no, I mean, I think there actually is an important point here, because a lot of people that have been watching mainstream kind of liberal media, what they think is happening is that Trump is putting in exhibitions arguing that slavery was good. What Trump is saying is that if we're going to teach about world historical events, we can't say nonsense that's racist against white people either, or discriminatory against Americans. When you talk about slavery, it's extremely important that slavery existed in literally every country in the history of the world. I mean, that's the one stop there. Like, if you're going to have an exhibit on slavery, it should include African slavery, the Arab slave trade, Russian serfdom. We almost forget that. But in Eastern Europe, I mean, the peasants were, you know, bought and sold until like 1900. You know, so you should talk about this practice. How do you think the pyramids got built? Modern construction equipment? You should have an entire discussion of this historical practice. You know, to some extent, is it wrong to take battle captives that have tried to kill you and make them work for free? Well, yeah, we now think it is. Okay, why? But this is when that practice began in Mesopotamia. This is when it ended. Mostly white people ended it, although, of course, there were black Union soldiers. So that's what the argument is. You need to have a realistic discussion about history. The discussion that we're having about history right now, like the 1619 Project model, is as crazy in its way as the Lost Cause narrative was. I mean, 40% of American high school students believe white people invented slavery. And that's a racial blood libel. That's just not true. And it's a stupid thing to say about 70% of our countrymen.
Keep going.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean, everything should be presented realistically. I've said this, and I think this is one of my kind of serious scholarly contributions, actually. But what you see with a lot of left-wing moral critique is people taking modern morality, things that we haven't even fully settled, like are men and women equal in every aspect of life, but taking that modern morality and applying it backward in history to a time when people in some ways were much more honorable. You know, 8% of young women today are on OnlyFans, whatever that platform is, but in some ways were much less honorable. Like if you lost a war, you were going to spend 23 years improving your agricultural skills. You know, so you're taking modern positions and you're putting them on an entirely different society, and you're saying, well, they fail. Of course they fail. Mm-hmm. We would fail by their standards. You know, what percentage of men are noble knights who have killed an enemy? What percentage of people have only had their spouse as a partner? What percentage of people go to church 3 times a week? I'm not even saying all this is good, but if you took the Puritan English standard, which worked quite well, helped establish this country, and judged us by that, we would all fail dramatically. I would myself. So we're doing this, we're doing it in reverse. And the last point, I guess, would be that we're only doing it to Western white countries. So no one is going into Zululand and asking what their level of feminism was.
Right, right.
I mean, this is a major state, you know, challenged the Brits to a big war. But the idea is that somehow, because they resemble a group that has suffered in America, you know, these great conquerors don't get the same analysis as, you know, much smaller European polities. Anyway, I basically agree with Trump that we need to fix that, and we need to dispassionately look at real history. The Native Americans were great warriors and also sometimes savage So they were great poets, but they also didn't have a written language in most tribes, and so on down the line.
Brooke Sigmund's going to be here this hour from Fox News. She's broken a lot of stuff on the Russia Gate, and I shouldn't say Russia Gate because I don't want to compare it to Watergate. The Russia hoax. There's been nothing like this in our lifetime. Nothing in our lifetime even comes close to what these people did and what they tried to do to President Trump. Nothing. But we'll talk to her about this, and a little bit later, we're going to talk to our buddy George Baquetto, about the Frank Rizzo statue. As the war on woke is now in a detente. Look, woke is never going to be over. You realize that, right? I've made this comparison. It is the villain in the horror movie that never dies. It's Michael Myers, not the funny one, the Halloween guy. It's Freddy. It's Jason Voorhees. It's the Texas Chainsaw Massacre guy, Leatherface. It's woke will be back. It's just right now. Dead for the moment. But these things never die. These things go in cycles. You know what I mean? They go in cycles. And if you think that woke is dead, in terms of it being dead, it's not dead. It's dead like Ghostface was dead at the end of Scream. Not dead. There's going to be a Scream 2 and then a Scream 52. Woke will be back. It's just on hiatus. The good news, though, is that when they did this poll recently, they found that like only 12% of people were offended by the Sydney Sweeney ad. I doubt it's even that high. But the problem is not that it's going to be a majority of people. It never will be. Let me tell you what the problem is and why woke will be back. Why Ghostface will be back. It's that at some point, the corporations that are all taking a gigantic sigh of relief right now, that are all turning around and saying, phew, we don't have to worry about this anymore. We can put, you know, hot chicks in jeans up again. And, you know, we can make jokes and we could put out politically incorrect movies and all that. We don't have to worry about these things. We kill our DEI programs and all these things. And they didn't want to do a lot of these things in the first place, but they felt like they had to because of the mob, the social media mob and the pressure. And now we've shined a light on it, like a mouse in a corner, and we've realized, hey, it's not that big. It's just a little tiny mouse. Just the reflection, the shadow was really big. But at some point, that's going to go back to that, where angry woke mobs, and I'm using air quotes here, mobs, will intimidate corporations, and the corporations will start bending the knee again, thinking they have to. And there will be people in those corporations who right now aren't saying anything, because the people that believe that their job in the corporation is to make money, have the voice and the power. But at some point, the annoying people that are the woke ones who are still there, I mean, they still work there, they're going to start speaking up again. And as the tide starts to turn, they will start to win out on things. You don't doubt me on this. To say woke is dead is like saying that they won't ever make another Halloween movie. Like, they're making another Halloween movie. It may not be with Jamie Lee Curtis. It may be with somebody else. I don't know. I mean, Jamie Lee Curtis seems to do, she seems like she'll never die. I mean, she, Freakier Friday, she was great. But how do we get to the woke of 2020? We got there. George Floyd's death resulted in this wave of wokeness and a sea of parades and marches and walks that defied the very COVID orders, and the very governors who had the orders against people gathering in public were marching with the people, like Tom Wolf in PA and His Royal Ruggedness King Philip the Unaccountable in New Jersey was like, oh, 400 years of white oppression. Who am I to say stay home? It's that kind of stuff. And, you know, right now I'm watching Gavin Newsom. They're showing him on Fox News as he's trying to claim that the 2026 midterms are rigged, and he's playing the game. But whoever, if there's a Democrat president, God forbid, 2028, that person will run as kind of a centrist. But 2029, 2030, they'll govern like a, I guarantee it, because the Democrat base is not going anywhere anytime soon. And what will happen is that the corporations will completely revert back to thinking they have to make the party happy, and they'll start doing, and then the White House will start pressuring the companies again with all their, don't forget, you had the Democrat administration, Barack Obama's administration, pressuring a lot of these companies. We want to know your woke score. What's your social justice score? Your corporate responsibility score. And they came up with all these different formulas to see how the company was behaving in terms of their hiring and their commitment to the environment and their commitment to this and that. And they had all their nonsense that they put on these companies. And then they started threatening them and using you want to talk about federal intimidation? It's not when the federal government has the DEA and the FBI partner up with local law enforcement to go after criminals. It's not that. No, they do that all the time. That's called the Joint Task Force. No, it's when you have the federal government intimidating private companies into yielding into their hiring practices and their donations, their carbon footprint, and all the other woke social justice nonsense that these companies were doing. And it becomes a reflection of that, obviously. Oh, so right now, woke is on hiatus. It's just waiting to come back, waiting for the right opportunity to come back. But for the moment, it's refreshing, and everybody's taking a wonderful deep breath as we're all able to enjoy our life again.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Red Meat. Don't forget to smash that subscribe button for your favorite tasty assortment of conservative audio. And follow your local Odyssey talk station to get shows from these hosts delivered daily wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, stay hungry.